Eden, mocking us all. Vlad was alive, reminding us that we lived in a bubble that he alone controlled. What is lost that can never be lost? A slight vibration ran up my spine and sent a faint buzz through my skull. Distant voices were shouting. Somewhere far away, a gun fired, but it all sounded detached to me. My mind was doing something other than listening to sounds here. Vlad was alive, but that wasn't entirely true. I was the one who was alive. In one fell swoop, my first encounter with Justin filled my awareness. Me, holding a stone that was my life, my mission, all that I would experience. My veins filled with light, because I was the light of the world, like him. My dad was talking, but he sounded far away. I lowered my eyes and looked at my arms. Immediately, I could see them. The real them. Once again, my skin was translucent. Once more, I could see my veins flowing with light beneath my skin. I glanced up, but was still blind. My father was pointing, talking frantically. He couldn't see the light. I looked down again, but I could see. The light was right there, flowing through my veins, casting an ethereal glow through my arms and body. The ancient mystic, Paulus, had seen this light when the scales fell from his eyes. Talia's words on the cliff returned to me. Let the scales fall from your eyes. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, because that shadow is nothing to fear, but fear itself. You can't defeat a shadow. You need only turn to the light, ignoring the shadow cast by the earthen vessel. Polarity, light and dark. And I was the light as well. I didn't need to defeat Vlad. I just needed to bring down the illusion created by his shadow, to collapse that view of the world so that we could see another world already present. The solution was to remove the scales that blinded me to true sight. What blinded Eden to the world beyond this valley? The sky. The bubble. Any thought of its crumbling brought fear. And for good reason. Even if there was a way to bring down the sky, doing so would leave us in the wasteland. A distant and low chuckle reverberated through the valley, as if originating from the image on the dome above us. But I couldn't be sure, because it seemed to come from everywhere at once. From me, I thought, from my own mind. I looked up at my father and spoke with an authority that surprised even me. Get to the courthouse as quickly as you can. Find your way to the basement. There's a key by the door in Hillary's office. Flashlights in the basket. Get down to the cells and lock yourself in. What? He needs you. He's coming for you. What about you? Go. Run. He ran. Chapter 37. I walked straight for the fountain in the town square, but I didn't feel like I was walking on the soles of my feet. Of her feet. I wasn't walking on the soles of Rochelle's feet, because Rochelle was only the label of my earthen vessel. My true identity wasn't that temporal flesh, that avatar, that jar of clay. I had only joined with it for a very short time, called this life, which ended almost as soon as it began. Beyond her was me, the eternal me, who was the light of the world because I was in Christi. And as in Christi, there was no problem, because it was finished. Death was no more. Like my true father, who couldn't be threatened or compromised in any way. I, too, was safe. Fear was caused by the shadow of death only to the extent I aligned with it, rather than to the light that I was. Rachelle, the earthen vessel, saw a problem, but that problem wasn't shared by the me who was the light. What is lost that can never be lost, daughter of Elion? The question whispered through me, gentle and inviting. My skin was tingling. Simon Moses had once preached a story about a man called Stephen, who had seen a great light and stood in perfect peace as he was stoned to death. That light was the law, Simon declared. Simon had the wrong law. The light wasn't the law of death. It was the law of grace. Whether I saw it or not, I was the light of the world. I stood by the fountain and felt like Stephen, embraced by a light that also filled me. In Christi is me. After all you've been through, you didn't really think a bullet or two would solve your problems. Surely not. I stopped 5 feet from the fountain and turned to the voice, clicking. Vlad stood in front of the door to the church, arms crossed, chewing on something, maybe a toothpick. His eyes glowed red and were as plain to me as the tattoo on my shoulder. Shadow Man, the accuser. Had he seen my father? Worry gnawed at my mind, my earthen vessel mind. You still don't understand who you're dealing with, do you? He said, lowering his arms, descending the stone steps. It's only you and me now, so let's be boringly plain, shall we? You think the shadow isn't real. How absurd. Just look around you, sweet pea. I see a very big problem. And in, he pulled something from his pocket, 57 minutes, every last soul in this stinkhole you call Eden is going to feel that very big problem. At least for a few minutes. Then they won't feel anything, because they'll be dead.
There is no death, I said.
Of course not. But that doesn't make it not real. Real is what your mind thinks it is, and I'm just getting started with you.
Keep your eyes on me, dear one. Don't be afraid of the shadow.
A slight tremor shook my lower jaw, and I breathed deep, settling into the voice of my comforter.
An illusion is an illusion because people see it as real, I said. And that illusion has as much effect on any human as the truth. Like you say, our tissue tops can only process what our algorithms know based on a system of logic and beliefs. But there's a way beyond that illusion. A way to see in Christi. And in that sight, I know you cannot harm the true me.
No? Well, as it turns out, I'm about to introduce you to a whole new form of harm.
To my earthen vessel, I said. Not to me.
He stopped, 10 paces away now, staring at me, toying with that toothpick between his teeth. He chuckled. My, my, we've been a busy girl in that yonder place, learning more than the mind can hold, are we? We have the white seal and the green seal, and we are quite proud of our progress. He spit the toothpick out. You've caught on to the fact that religion's fear is like this synthetic sky over our heads, protecting all the frightened little fearmongers inside from a threat that keeps them on the straight and narrow, but is utterly powerless in this life. The 49th does so well. But you still have two very significant problems.
Do I?
You're blind again, and if you think I'm done blinding you, you underestimate me. Again and again. Isn't that what I promised? The whole world will hate you. And I mean all of it. Not just this stinkhole. Through you, I'm going to blind them. Keep them powerless. Fear pulled at me. The unfairness of my blindness. The story from the Gospel of John tripped through my mind. Why was this one born blind? Whose sin caused it? Neither her sin nor the sin of any other, but so that God's glory would be revealed in her. That was my story. I was the story of everyone. I, the 49th mystic, represented all of humanity. The experience of finding light in the darkness was somehow worth all of that darkness. The very point of it. And that's the other problem, he said. You still feel fear. But that wasn't me. It was her, my earthen vessel. Shadow Man's only purpose was to blind the earthen vessel. But even being blind, either physically or spiritually, didn't change who I was as the daughter of Elion. It only changed the experience I had of this life. Yes, I said. She does. He slowly paced to my right. She? Rochelle, I said, lifting my eyes to the sky. Lift your eyes, and you will see the harvest is ripe. My earthen vessel. My voice sounded distant to my own ears.
Your earthen vessel is who you are.
He snarled. Fear laced his tone. I was chipping away at his confidence.
I'm going to help you know that.
He was accusing me, but I didn't care. My face was turned up, and I imagined his face grinning down at me from the sky. So easy to believe it was real. The law. Simon Moses' law. Fear-based religion. Protecting us from what? The wrath that would crush us if we didn't follow that law? Meaning fell into my mind, and I blinked. The fallout. It was all I said because he was coming for me, a black wraith with red eyes. My instincts took over and I shifted to my right. It's all I did, just a simple shift. But flowing with such power, my movement was blindingly quick and I sidestepped him easily. His lower body slammed into the concrete pool, shattering the wall. His head struck the fountain top, smashing it into 100 pieces.
Let go, daughter.
The words breathed through me, and the world stilled. It was true. Focused on protecting myself from Vlad, my mind was distracted by its fight-or-flight programming. I had to let go of that part of my mind.
Tell me, what is lost that can never be lost?
The third seal was the only hope for Eden, and I could feel it pulling at me. I looked up at the sky again, even as Vlad snarled and rushed me like a battering ram. This time his arm struck my shoulder, but I was turning with the impact, and the blow only spun me from my feet. I landed on my back, staring at the synthetic sky, and half of me was already rolling to my feet to evade another blow.
Turn to the light, dear one.
But the other half was breathing the voice. I let my muscles relax, and I lay still, ignoring the alarm bells clanging in my mind.
Don't be afraid of the shadow light creates.
Then that shadow was over me, twisted with darkness. He grabbed my waistband, plucked me from the ground, took two long steps and slammed me down on the broken fountain. The blow to my back knocked the wind from me. I knew that no amount of effort would free me from the powerful grip pinning me to the concrete.
"That's better," he said.
The darkness faded from his face, and he gave me a wink.
"Much, much better."
He lifted his head.
"Who is the father of this child under my fist?"
he roared.
"I'll give you to the count of three to present yourself, or I'll rip her throat out. And don't think I need her, because I don't. I need you."
It was a lie. He did need me, but my father would believe him. Fear sank its teeth deep into my mind again. The fact that I was feeling it so strongly generated its own fear, because it meant I was slipping, then spiraling. I began to panic, and my mouth responded, beginning a cry of objection that was cut short when he slugged me in the solar plexus.
"One?"
Tears stung my eyes. I tried to speak, but my lungs refused to work.
"Two?"
"I'm here." I heard my father running down the church's stone steps. "Let her go. Please. Just don't..." Vlad released me and was on him before he could finish the sentence. I don't know where he struck my father, only that the crunching blow rendered him unconscious before he hit the ground. By the time I had twisted my head, fearing the worst, I saw that it had already happened. My father lay in a heap, with one leg folded awkwardly under his body. David blinked once, then opened his eyes. A charred stone ceiling shifted in shadows cast by wavering torchlight. He was back.
"Rochelle."
He jerked up, felt the restraints bite deeply into his wrists, and collapsed back onto their stone table.
"He's awake."
It was his tormentor, the priest who had worked on his fingers. But his fingers no longer concerned him. Only two thoughts did. Vlad had Rochelle. He no longer needed her alive. David had spent his whole life protecting his daughter, every waking moment helping her cope with her blindness in the cruel world of darkness. Nothing but his daughter's safety mattered to him. There was now only one way to save her. The one called Bale walked up to the table, gray eyes bloodshot. "You're awake." Tears filled David's eyes and spilled past his temples.
"It doesn't have to be painful," Bale said. "The choice is yours. But I will help you make the right choice if you insist. In this way, pain can be your friend."
"If I..." David's voice hitched, and he cleared his throat.
"What happens if I write?"
"You don't know? You will return Vlad to us."
"Here? In this dream?"
Bael hesitated, then dipped his head.
"Yes, to this dream."
"Away from my daughter?" Another hesitation.
"Yes, away from your daughter."
"Then I'll write," he breathed.
"You'll write?"
"Yes, I'll write."
"A wise choice."
To the other priest, "Give me the book." How can you describe the connection between a loving father and a daughter who has depended on him for guidance and love her whole life? How can you fathom the fear she might feel at the prospect of losing him? I can't describe the connection. I can only describe the momentary terror that washed through me as I lay on my back, facing the sky. I couldn't bear to look at my father, crumpled on the ground. Everything that I thought protected me in this life teetered on a razor's edge. If not for the words I heard next, I might have died there.
What is lost that can never be lost? Look beyond the finger. See what it points to, daughter.
It wasn't the meaning of the words that calmed me. It was the sweet, soft, caring, and yet utterly concerned way in which I heard those words that flooded me with warmth and eased my panic. So why should the evidence this valley presented fill me with fear? I closed my eyes. I wanted to see another world. I had to see the unseen. The realm that was here and now and flowing with light. The one I'd seen with Talia.
That's good. Trust me. Look past the evidence that blinds you. See the light.
Tears burst into my eyes. Elyon, I croaked, barely audible.
Tell me who I am.
You are infinite. You are love. You are the light. Nothing can threaten you.
And who are you?
I am your daughter, made in your likeness, the light of the world. I'm in Christi. Nothing can threaten me either.
Never. Now tell me, what is lost that can never be lost?
My perception, I thought. Even when I don't see the truth, I'm still seeing. Sight can be lost, but it's never really lost. It's only seeing something else. The moment I thought it, heat spread through my extremities and warmed my fingers. But there was more to the third seal.
What is lost?
What is not lost? A journey. Even when I was lost in the journey of life, I was still going somewhere. Right then, feeling so lost, I was still on a journey of some kind. What journey? The journey of perception, of learning to see.
Open your eyes, daughter.
The heat had spread up to my face, burning hot now. I opened my eyes and saw the air was flowing with wisps of colored light, sprinkled with a thousand tiny stars, like fireflies twinkling on and off, not only above me but all around me. I was seeing what normal eyes could not see. And there was more. The sky. The image of the seals on my arm now filled the entire sky. A white band, glowing like a polished pearl.
Origin is infinite.
Inlaid with a green band. Me in the world of creation. I am the light of the world. And now a deep black core that shone like polished onyx. Perception. Blindness was and always had been my only challenge. My pulse pounded. No other sound now, just the crushing of a heart on the verge of uncovering a hidden treasure. The sky, like scales that blinded.
Let the scales fall from your eyes.
The sky was blinding us, I thought. It was blinding the whole world to the sight of the unseen. The light. My journey in this life was to see the light. I knew this already. But now I was experiencing it on my own. Knowing it. Barely able to breathe for the anticipation coursing through me, I slowly lifted my hand so my palm faced the sky, spread my fingers wide, and spoke the words that filled my mind. Seeing the light in darkness, I breathed, is my journey. My body was that of a girl, laid out on her back, helpless. But in the next moment, white light erupted from my body and shot to the sky with a ferocious hum. It pierced the core of the black circle, then spread to the outer white band. The moment it made contact with the outer ring, the sky detonated with a blinding, silent flash, brighter than any sun. It's all I saw for a few seconds, because I reflexively clamped my eyes shut. But it's not all I experienced. I felt the light collapse back into my chest, my body trembling with raw pleasure. My mind was soaring on the wings of numbing wonder. My right shoulder felt as though it was on fire. I was being branded. I had found the third seal. And then, just like twice before, the power was gone, leaving me there on the fountain, limp, tingling in the afterglow. But the light wasn't entirely gone. I could see it through my eyelids, the way you see the sun with your eyes shut, red and hot. My eyes snapped wide. The clouds were gone. A blazing sun stood high above in an amazingly blue sky. My sight was back. Something was falling, like a mist or ash, slowly drifting down from high above the valley. The scales had fallen. I'd collapsed the synthetic sky. Chapter 38. I lay stunned by my fully restored sight, trying to make sense of what my eyes were seeing. I had collapsed the barrier that protected Eden from radiation poisoning. I reached for my right sleeve and jerked it up. A black circle, shiny like onyx, filled in the center of the white and green bands, still glowing. Black showed that although I was often blind to the truth that I was the light, I could learn to see. 3 of 5 seals. White, origin is infinite. Green, I am the light of the world. Black, seeing the light in darkness is my journey. The scales had fallen from my eyes. I was seeing the light in darkness. And then I remembered Vlad and the explosives. I twisted and rolled off the fountain, ignoring the pain that flashed down my spine. There was no sign of Vlad. He'd vanished, but his threat against Eden remained. He'd rigged the valley to blow. Of that, I was quite sure. As to his threat regarding the fallout, I doubted it. My father lay where he'd fallen, still oblivious. But that's not what froze me. It was the light glowing around him, coming from him. I blinked as if to correct my sight, but the light remained. I slowly turned my head and saw 2 residents, Abel and Susan, standing dumbstruck, staring up at the sky. They too glowed slightly. This was the same light I'd seen in my veins with Justin, only now I was seeing it more plainly. My perception of the world had changed. New creatures, all things new. The light of the world. I was seeing who they really were, but were they seeing it? No, I thought, as 2 more people stumbled into the open. They were, however, seeing the falling sky. I stepped down from the pool and crossed the lawn just as the first flecks of ash from our vaporized sky reached the ground. Like snowflakes, only lighter, floating down in silence, landing on my face and arms, the grass blanketing the entire town. Walking toward my father's limp form, I felt as free as those flakes, as brilliant as the light coming from my father. I knelt on one knee and shook him, then patted his face. "Dad! Dad, wake up!" Only a half hour had passed since I'd shot him full of adrenaline, and he needed no more encouragement to regain consciousness. His eyes fluttered open, and he stared up into my face, still lost between worlds. "Listen carefully," I said, still taken aback by the light emanating from him. "I'll explain everything later, but right now we need to clear the valley. We have 45 minutes before this whole valley blows." He saw the falling ash and jerked up. "What happened?" "The sky fell," I said. "It's okay. It's a good thing. But it won't matter if we can't get everyone out." I hesitated. "Can you see anything strange? Like light?"
"The sky?"
My father couldn't see the light I was seeing. He twisted, looking frantically around.
"Where is he?"
"Vlad." "Gone," I said. Our eyes met, and I knew immediately that he'd written Vlad into Other Earth. Not by the look in his eyes, but by a thought that entered my mind. His thought. I dismissed it as my mind playing tricks. "Don't worry about Vlad right now," I said. "All of it's part of our journey." His eyes filled with tears.
"She was right."
"Who was?"
"Miranda. She wondered if you were an oracle, going beyond and bringing back the keys to truth, that through you we were experiencing one of the most extraordinary events in all of human history. She was right. I'm so sorry. I..."
Emotion choked him off. I pulled his head close and kissed his forehead. "Thank you for saving me." He hadn't really saved me, but he'd tried with all he knew to do, and that was all that mattered to me. He was still in Bael's thrall. Elion only knew what he would endure while he waited for me to save him. And what if I couldn't? I was in a deep hole below the Elionite city, all alone, dead to that world as I slept there, dreaming this. Vlad was now there somewhere. Sure, he would blind me again. And through my blindness, he would blind the world. It was what the shadow of death did. But not in Eden. Not today. I put my hands on my father's shoulders. "Forget about all that now. Right now we have to clear this valley. Get everyone to the tunnel." I glanced up and saw 7 or 8 people walking tentatively down Third Street, led by a shell-shocked Linda, who held her hand out, watching the flakes alighting on her palm. All of them had that same light. "How many are we now?" I asked. My father pushed himself to his feet, staring at the sky, finally coming to himself.
"What about the fallout?"
"I'm not sure," I said, speaking with more urgency now. "But that won't matter either if we can't clear this valley. How many? 140?
"I don't know."
He looked at Linda, grappling with memories of last night.
"It depends."
"The fewer cars, the better. The tunnel isn't big enough. Get the vans and trucks. Use a bullhorn. Do whatever you need to do. Just get everyone up into that tunnel in the next 30 minutes.
"What about you?"
I stood. "I need to find out what's waiting for us up there." Boots pounded on the pavement, and Barth tore around the church, then pulled up sharply, glowing with the same light coming from my father. He stared at the sky, Linda, my father, and me. At least a dozen more residents had emerged from hiding to see the new sky filled with ash. All of them, the light of the world, and not knowing it. The light faded and winked out, but not exactly. I just wasn't seeing the world as clearly as I had a moment ago.
What's happening?
Barth stammered.
Vlad's happening, I said, walking toward him. Then loudly turning so they could all hear me, I said, He rigged the whole town to blow in 45 minutes. Follow my father and Barth. Get everyone to the tunnel. Everyone!
Then to Barth.
I need a car.
He hesitated, still in shock, dug into his pocket and pulled out a set of keys.
The blue truck.
Behind him, parked on First Street.
It's an automatic.
I closed the distance between us and put my fingers on the keys, but I lingered there, eyeing him closely.
It's over, Barth. Vlad's gone. Help my father.
He hesitated, then gave me a short nod.
No more guns, I pressed. Promise me.
Another nod. I took the keys and headed for Linda.
You heard her, everyone,
Barth snapped.
Let's move it.
They moved, hesitant for a moment, then with something close to panic as the threat of explosions settled in. Bill was yelling,
The town's gonna blow!
At the top of his lungs, running for his hardware store. Cindy Jarvis was shouting something about the buses. My father was trying to urge calm, shouting for Bill to grab 3 bullhorns. Barth turned and ran north in the direction of his house, maybe unconcerned about the fate of the rest, maybe just to get his wife and children. The fact that 7 children were still missing sat like a stone in my gut. But I had a notion. The only hope for them, really.
You can drive, right, Linda?
The moment her eyes met mine, I knew her fear. Knew it in the same way I had known my father's thoughts only a minute earlier.
Yes, but what?
I need someone to drive me to the tunnel, I interrupted, hurrying for the blue pickup truck.
And I need you with me.
What for?
To find the children.
I dared not give Linda any false hope as she sped up the blacktop, taking the switchbacks at a speed that had me clinging to the center console.
If they're not where I think they are, then we'll make another sweep, I said.
Where do you think they are?
It's just a hunch.
What hunch?
You'll see.
Why can't you tell me? She overdrove a corner and overcorrected at the last minute, sending us careening toward the ditch before jerking back on course, though on the wrong side now.
Getting us there in one piece would be helpful, I said.
Sorry.
Just focus.
She gripped the wheel in both hands and bore down, face white. It took us less than 10 minutes to reach the exit. The gated fence on our side of the cliff was open, as was the tunnel. But there was no light coming through from the other side, which could only mean that the exit doors on the tunnel were closed. If Vlad had locked them, we'd have to find a way through. Short of that, we'd hunker down in the tunnel and hope the walls were thick enough to protect us from any blasts. Linda pulled to a screeching stop at the tunnel entrance. We stared into the long darkness, silent for a few breaths.
Now what?
She asked.
I opened my door.
Wait here.
No way. I'm coming.
I set my mind on the far end of the tunnel and walked up the yellow dashes in the middle of the road, leaving Linda to follow. The darkness didn't bother me. I could see well enough with my blind sight, 1 foot in front of the other, like walking through any dark valley. Halfway through, I began to jog. Linda needed no encouragement. The slapping of our shoes on the pavement sounded like 2 tap drums out of sync. A paper-thin thread of light ran down the center seam of the twin doors, and I kept my eyes on it. Only it. Then I was there, grasping the large vertical handle, tugging. There was no lock that I could see. Linda crashed into the door, breathing heavily.
Pull, I said. She pulled. The large doors grated as the metal wheels on which they rode squealed stubbornly. Pull, she cried. I pulled. The door gained some momentum and suddenly rolled freely, coasting wide to reveal the world beyond Eden. Linda and I stood side by side, panting, gazing at majestic green mountains as far as we could see. Towering red boulders framed pine and aspen in a valley that descended to a huge lake 20 or 30 miles distant. My heart soared. How? Linda took a step forward, shaking her head. This isn't right. What about the fallout? There never was any fallout, I said, walking past her. He lied to us. Why? He wanted us totally unraveled and divided. He pitted my father against Barth, knowing I would try to save my father. If not for the threat of fallout, we might have banded together, desperate to get out. Smart. A wide band of ash, several hundred yards down the valley, marked the perimeter of the collapsed dome. The last time I'd stood here looking out, the green trees had ended there, at the edge of a wasteland. But that wasteland had only been an image on a screen, like the synthetic sky inside. A thumping sound reached me, and for a second I thought it might be the detonations inside Eden. Then I saw the black helicopter circling wide. So we aren't in a safe haven? Linda asked. No, none of that was true. But we are in a bubble, isolated from the rest of the world. We were, that is. She turned to me, stupefied. So then why, if there was no nuclear war? I don't know yet. The sound of beating rotors grew louder as the helicopter spotted us and sharply turned down. Tires screeched behind us at the mouth of the tunnel as the first of Eden's residents arrived. You mean the rest of the world still exists? There was no war? That's what I mean. The synthetic sky was real enough, but the story about the fallout was Vlad turning the screws, and it worked. Nothing like a nuclear holocaust to terrify the tissue tops. What about my children? You think? I'm hoping whoever's in the helicopter can tell us where they are. But I don't know, Linda. I really don't. The helicopter angled in toward us, blowing up dust and debris as it feathered its blades for a landing on the turnaround up the road. Feet slapped the pavement behind us, dozens of them, then slowed to a walk as the scene before them came into view. The black helicopter settled to the ground. Let's go, I said to Linda. A tall, slim man in a navy suit dropped from the helicopter's open door, took one long look around, and walked toward us as the engine wound down. We met halfway. His eyes were bleary and red, his face drawn tight. He nodded and looked past us to the open tunnel.
I need to speak to Simon Moses.
I hesitated, not sure how I should address him, so I just said it. Vlad Smith had him executed. His face paled.
Who's in charge?
She is, Linda said, stepping forward and pointing at me. Can you tell us where the missing children are? The man eyed her, then me, mired in deep fear. And in that fear I knew his thoughts. Not the words of those thoughts, necessarily, just the meaning of them, before they became my own thoughts and words. It was the third time I'd been able to perceive what someone else was thinking when they were under duress. The third seal had expanded my perceptions. I knew some things about this man, starting with his name, which was Steve.
"What children?"
Steve asked.
"My children."
Linda looked at me, eyes frantic, then at him, angry.
"You don't know where they are?"
You have missing children?
Are you deaf?
A car door slammed near the tunnel behind us. The faint voice of a young boy reached me over the helicopter's dying rotors.
"Can I see my mommy now?"
I twisted back and saw Barth's black Suburban, doors open. Jordan, Linda's boy, stood next to Barth, hand in his. Several others were climbing out behind them. The missing children.
"Jordan?"
Linda sobbed. She took off, tearing for them. By the look of shame on Barth's face, I knew. He'd taken them on Vlad's orders. More chaos. I felt pity for the man. He'd only acted out of his programming from the start. The whole town had. Just like the whole world. Linda swept her boy off the ground and grabbed her daughter, weeping tears of joy that filled my throat with a knot. Other cars had pulled up, bringing other residents. All emerged, staring at the world beyond the bubble, a world they'd never seen. I saw little Karina among them, blonde curls tangled but otherwise no sign of harm. I wondered if she knew that both her father and mother were dead. I wanted to rush to her and hug her and tell her how beautiful she was. But if we didn't deal with the explosives, she wouldn't be the only child without a mother or father. My pulse surged, like a clock wound too tight. Time was running out.
"We would have come in days ago," Steve was saying behind me, "but we knew he'd detonate the explosives we'd set as a safeguard when we built the town, and the ones he rigged at all the entrances. We have no clue how he hacked the system."
He was talking in a rush, spilling all of his secrets, seeking absolution as he paced, one hand in his hair.
"You have to understand,
It's okay. Slow down." I decided to cut to the chase for his sake, as much as ours. "Your name is Steve, and you're from the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency," I said. "DARPA. You helped create Eden, and it's all gone wrong, so you're afraid. But you know that you were only doing what you were told. It's going to be okay, but we have to get everyone out." He stared at me, at a loss.
"How did you know my name?"
"The same way I brought the sky down," I said. "But I don't think you'd understand." I refocused. "What year is it?"
2038. "You brought the seal down?"
"Who's the president?"
"Calvin Johnson."
He swallowed.
"I'm so sorry. What's your name?"
In Christie, I thought. "Rochelle," I said.
"Rochelle Matthews? The programming didn't work with you. I thought you were blind."
"I was."
"And you really brought it down?"
"What's Project Eden?"
"A controlled experiment in epigenetics and quantum consciousness. Its purpose was to study the effects of both physical and cognitive perception, to better understand to what extent we create our reality based on agreed-upon beliefs. It was a noble concept, you understand, dedicated to the survival of our species."
"Are there other towns like this?"
"No, just Eden."
Steve buried his face in his hands.
"I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. We're gonna pay a price for this. The whole world's gonna crucify us. All of the initial residents volunteered. They knew we'd wipe their memories. But they're gonna say we should have known."
"Then maybe it's best if the world doesn't know. Right now we have to...
They already do. This place will be crawling with media within the hour. I made the call as soon as the seal collapsed.
Seal. Evidently DARPA's official term for our sky.
There are two choppers on the way as we speak. We couldn't get in, you realize. Not without blowing the whole sky. You can't cut through it.
He eyed me, unbelieving.
You're sure you took it down? How? It's made from carbine fibers.
A beat.
What else can you do?
I wasn't sure even I knew, but I was sure they would want to know. The whole world would. How far out? The helicopters?
Maybe 10 minutes.
My mind spun. Vlad said the whole town would blow. We have maybe 25 minutes. You said you planted the explosives as a safeguard. I'm assuming to cover your tracks in the event of a meltdown. He found access to whatever triggers those explosives, right? His face went white.
It's on a countdown? Where's Smith?
He's gone. Can you defuse the explosives?
What do you mean, gone?
He vanished when I brought the sky down. Can you defuse them? He shook his head.
No. Half of them are buried under the town. The triggers are...
Is there a way off the mountain?
I looked at the building that blocked the main road to our right, the only way in or out by road.
Through the control center? 3 helicopters can't carry 140 people.
The control center's rigged. And if we could defuse the explosives, we would have done it last week.
He faced me.
140? Should be 152 without Simon.
He wasn't the only one who died.
I had to get him focused.
And if this whole mountain comes down...
There's no chance of that. The cliffs and town, yes, but not the tunnel or the mountain. It's solid rock, 94 feet at its thinnest, right through. No one was ever going to find or compromise this place. Even from the sky, it looked just like it always looked, a sinkhole. The seal both camouflaged and protected it from above. It took us 2 years.
We're running out of time.
I couldn't see Peter among the gathering residents. He was still in the valley.
You're sure we're safe this side of the tunnel?
Sorry. Yes, he paced, without question.
Then take me back in, I said, stepping past him. We have to find the rest. All of them.
The next 25 minutes brought a flurry of activity. Steve had regained a measure of command and worked methodically, doing his best to put a dent in an overwhelming guilt that had been building for days. He instructed Walter, the only other man besides the pilot who'd come with him, to group Eden's residents at the turnaround, clear of the tunnel in case there was any blowback. The moment we were airborne, he radioed the inbound police and gave them specific instructions. They would have 15 minutes to clear stragglers and any dead bodies they could find. My purpose for being there was only to offer my voice. Not all in the town were as strong-willed as Barth and Linda. Many had hidden themselves, struggling to cope with minds fractured by the discovery that their lives were a lie. Hearing a strange voice bellowing out instructions over a bullhorn might not persuade the most damaged. But if they heard my voice over the helicopter's PA system, they would believe. I was the girl who'd stood up to Vlad, the blind one who could now see. On our first pass, we picked up Jerome Clement, a farmer who'd hidden his 2 children, Smitty and Cassandra, in a grain silo east of town. Then old man Butterworth on the same pass. He'd taken his rifle and was hunkered down in a large pile of hay bales 100 yards past the silo.
Peter still wasn't among those who'd made it out, and my urgency grew.
Peter, we have to find him.
Simon's son?
He lost his mother and father both. We have to find him.
What if he'd gone deep, overwhelmed by the deaths of his parents? Trucks and cars spilling over with residents snaked up the switchbacks as we made that first pass. My father still raced through the town, leaning out the window of his red Toyota truck, shouting his warning over a bullhorn. He'd loaded several dead bodies in the bed, Simon and Hillary among them. The large black helicopters arrived and started making their rounds while we were on our second pass. By then the vehicles snaking up the blacktop had thinned to a dozen at most. We found three more stragglers, among them Betsy and her poodle, Puddle. Betsy, who always had some form of eczema on her arms and neck. Today, only 2 days after learning that all her memories of childhood trauma had been implanted, the rash was gone, leaving her aged skin clear. How many others had experienced spontaneous remissions of various conditions since learning they'd only been believing their programming? Most were probably still clinging to various forms of fear. Not Betsy. Betsy was smiling. But there was still no sign of Peter. By our third pass, my father's red truck was the only vehicle to be seen heading up the road. There were still horses and cows, chickens, goats, and maybe a pet or two, though I doubted the latter. Their owners would have taken them as part of their family. But the livestock were in the fields, and Steve assured me that there wasn't enough rock in the cliffs to cover all the fields. At least some would survive. I prayed he was right. But Peter was still missing, and we were running out of time.
We have to find him.
We're cutting it close.
Go in again.
I used the bullhorn, calling Peter's name for the whole valley to hear, but he still didn't show himself. I could only hope that he'd gotten out some other way, but I worried that he had no intention of leaving the valley. On that fourth and final pass, we picked up my father just beyond the tunnel.
Still no sign of Peter?
My father shook his head. I didn't know what to think.
Everyone else made it?
I've asked the group twice. No one else is missing anyone.
He turned heavy eyes and stared at the gathering. Some still dazed, others animated and talking.
Barth said he buried Miranda in a hole by the hydro. I don't think we have enough time to retrieve her body.
I wondered if Barth would be prosecuted for murder. Most of me hoped not. Innocent by reason of insanity. Just like the whole world, I thought. Every last human on Earth was acting out of their programming, however lost. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. Either way, the real fallout of Eden would soon shake the world. They would all hear about the blind girl who could see, the one who'd brought down the synthetic sky. And then what? And then the 49th mystic would bring a sword to divide.
Elyon, help me.
One more pass, I said.
We're out of time, Steve said.
Radio chatter squawked on the speakers. The two helicopters were pulling out, heading back to refuel before returning with others to begin the evacuation to Salt Lake.
I want to see it from the sky, I said.
Steve nodded.
Take her up, Jake. Give us a view of the valley, but stay clear.
From our view, 1,000 feet above the town, Eden looked like a perfectly peaceful piece of heaven, dropped into the center of a lush green bowl with red walls. White and beige houses lined squared streets around the large church. Not a structure was out of place by even a foot. The perfect picture of law.